The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So often in these talks, we open to and explore what it means to meet difficulty. That's what I talked about last week, in fact, turning towards difficulty with mindfulness and exploring, you know, how might we be able to hold it and what can we learn about our minds. And that movement of turning towards difficulty begins to have a transforming impact on our experience. And yet so often, maybe partly because the Buddhist teaching, the Four Noble Truths, are framed around suffering, you know, the Four Noble Truths. The first noble truth, there is suffering. That suffering happens in our experience. And there's the kind of suffering that is caused by our mind wanting things to be a certain way, either wanting things to not be here that are unpleasant or wanting to hold on to things that are pleasant. That there's a kind of a craving in our minds that creates so much of what we call suffering in our experience. And then that there's possible, I mean, the third and fourth noble truths actually talk about the possibility for being free from that, from releasing from suffering, and that there's a way to move in that direction, a path, a set of tools that the Buddha offered to help us release from suffering, to let go of the way we continually try to figure out how to make things be the way we want them to be. And so the second half of the Four Noble Truths, we can look at this really as being, it's not stated in this way. I mean, the way it's stated is it's possible to be free from suffering. But the Buddha called that possibility the greatest happiness. So he's really talking about how we can be happy in our lives. And so this is a piece I want to explore today, is looking a little bit about the other side of our experience, how can we cultivate happiness? How can we open to the beautiful qualities in our hearts and minds more with mindfulness? And so, while understanding suffering is much of our path, as I was talking about last week, turning towards suffering, it's not the only part of the practice. There's a teaching in the Eightfold Path, the path that is the Buddha's teaching about how we can move in the direction of freedom, how we can move in the direction of letting go of suffering and cultivating these beautiful qualities of ease, of peace, of balance of mind, of love, of compassion, of contentment. And the teaching is called the right effort. And in that he points out, or he says, that we both need to explore and look at the side of our minds that gets caught and stuck, to explore what it might mean to understand that suffering, which will lead to its transformation. And the Buddha talked about, for the difficult states of mind that are kind of founded in greed, aversion, and delusion, that we move in the direction of letting go of those states of mind and finding ways to not encourage them in our experience. And basically the teaching of being aware of the difficulty is just that. Sometimes people, in hearing that teaching that the Buddha appointed to abandoning or letting go of greed, aversion, delusion, anger, hostility, impatience, confusion, all of those difficult reactive states of mind, you feel like they're not supposed to have them, or they're supposed to be able to, in meditation, make them go away. But really what the practice is, that we open with mindfulness to the difficulty. And that allows the releasing, that allows the transformation, that allows those states to release and let go. And so it's not that we're trying to get rid of, or we're trying to, you know, do something to stop our difficult states of mind. In a way, what we're trying to do is open to them. And that opening to with mindfulness creates the conditions for something else to happen, for the mind to learn and understand how it's participating in some of the pain that is being created in there. And as the mind begins to recognize that, it begins to understand how it can let it go, how it might be able to release it. It's really interesting to me that this seems to be one of the ways that mindfulness works, that as we turn our attention to difficult states of mind, it creates the conditions for our mind to begin to understand very directly, immediately in the moment, this is not conducive to well-being. And something about the way our system works, you know, the way our organism works, it kind of wants to move in the direction of well-being, and yet it fundamentally has kind of gotten confused about how to make that happen or how that works. And you know, the experience of all of these reactive states in particular, you know, somehow we think that these reactive states are moving us in the direction of well-being. I remember directly thinking this, you know, well, this anger is going to make me feel better somehow because that other person is going to be so miserable. But what I was not aware of so clearly was how painful it was, how painful the anger was. And so the mindfulness, the turning towards, creates the conditions that we begin to, our system begins to understand that these difficult reactive states are not heading us towards well-being. They're not moving us in the direction of happiness. And so our mind begins to, it's basically getting a different education. Our mind gets a different education when we turn with mindfulness to our reactive states of mind. But then the other side of wise effort is cultivating and maintaining, opening to and maintaining beautiful qualities of mind, qualities like compassion, love, generosity, contentment, peace, happiness, delight, joy, patience. And the beautiful thing about mindfulness is that when we turn with mindfulness to these states of mind, when we open to them when they come up, when we turn towards them or cultivate them, the mindfulness of these beautiful states of mind, of these wholesome states of mind, tends to create the conditions for them to increase, to happen more frequently in our experience. And so it's this, the mindfulness serves this double role. And so as we attend in our experience with this perspective, with the mindfulness that's curious about, well, what is this experience that's happening right now? It's not just being aware, because a thief can be aware. A thief can be very clearly aware while they're walking through a house and trying to be very quiet to steal something, you know. But there, the motivation behind the mindfulness is greed, is to steal. And so the motivation or the perspective, the direction of the mindfulness needs to have this kind of curiosity of, well, what does it mean to be a human being that's experiencing this thing? What does it mean to be a human being that's experiencing anger or confusion? Or what does it mean to be a human being that's experiencing love or compassion or patience or joy or delight or happiness? As we explore that, as we explore mindfulness with that curiosity, that kind of mindfulness will create the conditions for the reactive states of mind to weaken over time, and for the beautiful states of mind, the wholesome states of mind, the skillful states of mind, the minds that lead us in the direction of peace, to get stronger. And this teaching of, so that's one piece about the teaching of wise effort, that basically if you're practicing this kind of mindfulness, if you're practicing mindfulness that's just curious about, well, what is the human experience? Then that kind of mindfulness is already working on both sides of wise effort. In fact, if we're bringing that kind of wise mindfulness to some kind of reactive state, right in that experience, right there, it's creating the conditions for the reactive state to be understood as suffering and to be understood as something that's not well-being, for the mind to begin to release it and let it go. And at the same time, you are cultivating mindfulness and patience and possibly even some other qualities of curiosity. Maybe even the sense of friendliness towards your experience. And so right there, you're cultivating beautiful qualities simultaneously while you're holding that difficult state in your mindfulness. And so that's one piece about the wise effort. And I'd like to kind of emphasize or look at what does it mean to emphasize or explore opening to wholesome states of mind, opening to happiness. How can we cultivate happiness or practice happiness? What might it mean to practice happiness? Because this is a part of the path. It doesn't all have to be looking like, oh, what's I used to at some points in my practice, earlier in my practice, pretty early in my practice, I would, you know, stumble into periods of time where the mind felt really calm, pretty contented and happy. And initially, what my mind would do with that would be something like, oh, calm, that's nice. Now's the perfect time to look at that pain in my back. You know, instead of really taking in the experience of calm and peace and ease, I decided to, I'm going to look at something really challenging. You know, kind of, you know, just almost dismissing or not really taking in the beautiful state that I was experiencing. And so sometimes we can kind of, with the teachings so much around opening to, turning towards reactivity, we can miss that there's another side to the practice. And so this is the piece I'd like to explore. And so the first part to look at is just beginning to recognize what probably the most powerful, one of the most powerful ways to cultivate these wholesome states is to notice when they're happening. So states like contentment or ease or peace or happiness or patience or mindfulness or calm or love or compassion. We have these experiences in our day. Maybe you could explore the possibility of being curious about not, well, when does some particular reactive thing happen, but can I notice when kindness happens? Can I notice when the feeling of generosity happens? When that feeling of sharing or gratitude, appreciation, can I notice these? And we don't have to wait for the big ones. We can, you know, just in our day, just in little ways. At one point, I heard, it was a talk by Ajahn Amaro, and he pointed out that, you know, when you're driving down the freeway, if you back up a little bit as somebody's trying to merge in, that's an act of generosity. Appreciate it. recognize it. Feel how it feels to offer that. Now, there may be a little bit of frustration or resistance. Somebody's butting in front of me. But maybe you can turn it around. Because so many of our interchanges with people can be looked at through this lens of generosity and giving and sharing and caring. You know, even just taking a walk through the neighborhood, maybe you could offer a smile to somebody. This was a practice. At one point I was doing my exercise was a walk through my neighborhood. And during that time, I decided, because I kept seeing people, some similar people, and I decided to just, if they looked at me, if they made eye contact with me, I would smile. And I began to recognize, at first it felt a little bit, awkward or, but I kept doing it, and it got much more natural as time went on. And then what started to happen is people started smiling back. And I got really curious about the experience there because it felt really good. A smile. At one point I even timed it. How long did I feel good? It was about 40 seconds, the feeling of delight that was going over me as I, offered and received a smile. And then it kind of faded as I went on. But, it wasn't like I got depressed or anything. It's just like that feeling had its life and it just moved through. And so there's just little ways to explore touching into these qualities, finding some small ways that you might be able to practice recognizing them. Maybe another thing that I did at one point was I used my time in the Safeway. Whenever I went into the grocery store, I began just trying to have a feeling of kindness, a wish of kindness for whoever I met. Just in a simple way, may you have some ease in your life. Just using some of those simple phrases in the metta practice. So again, just finding ways, small ways, to bring the possibility of these qualities into your heart and then noticing, how does it feel? How does it feel to offer a smile? How does it feel to let somebody have an easy merge on the freeway? We have so many opportunities for this. And then as we start to get familiar with those feelings, because I think so much we do have like little hits of this kind of experience through our day, these little hits of kindness or friendliness or ease or patience or just a simple kind of resting. We have moments like that in our day. And yet often because of our minds kind of propelling into the future or thinking out about the past, we don't recognize them. And so as you start to get familiar and be curious about when do these qualities come up, when does the mind feel patience, or when is there a sense of kindness? When does the mind feel that? In beginning to get familiar with how they feel, then our mind begins to recognize them more because they do happen to us. It's kind of like they may happen and then we get lost in them. And sometimes I found that I could talk myself out of happiness. I mean, my mind would just kind of spin and spin. One time I was driving and I noticed my mind was really spinning into the future. And it was not pleasant. It was trying to figure out how to get things done in the future somehow. And the mind was very restless around it. And so I kept noticing this, and I was driving, and I kept coming back. It's like, oh, come back, hands on the steering wheel, be present for, you know, be present for driving is what I was trying to do. But then the mind just kept going out. And I got curious about that. The mind kept going spinning into this restless kind of future making. And at some point, because I did this several times, come back, be with the driving, and it kept happening, I got curious. And basically what my exploration was something like, what else is going on here? Clearly there's something going on that I'm not seeing. And my assumption was that it was some kind of reactive state of mind, that there was some kind of, you know, fear or anxiety or confusion. It's like, what is going on here? And what I discovered as I kind of settled back and said, well, what else is happening here? Is that I was really happy. And I had missed that. And what was kind of going on was something along the lines of, how can I make sure that I stay happy? Only I had completely missed that I was happy in this project of trying to figure out how to keep this going. So this kind of thing happens to us. And so as we begin to get more familiar with the states of the beautiful states of mind, then we begin to recognize them more. So I want to talk about a few different kinds or different aspects of happiness. I think our habitual, the way that our culture and our upbringing often points to happiness is around sense pleasure. You know, that when we have pleasant things around us, that's where happiness comes. And, you know, the Buddha did say there is a kind of happiness that comes with sense pleasure. You know, that you get something that you like, yes, there's a kind of happiness that comes with that. And yet he also pointed to that kind of happiness being the most fleeting kind of happiness, the least reliable kind of happiness. And so it's worth recognizing that kind of happiness that comes there and what's going on around it. Because as we start to recognize that sometimes that kind of happiness is coming because we've gotten something that we've wanted or we've gotten rid of something that we don't wanted, sometimes it can feel like, oh, I figured it out, I'm in control, or have this thing. And so just notice that. And then how long does the happiness of that last? You'll find that often it doesn't last for long, because the habit is to find the next thing so that I'll have that moment of happiness again. So we get on this spiral, this cycle, kind of an endless cycle of, oh, when was the last time I was happy? Well, it was when I had something I wanted, so let me find something else to want. There is also another kind of happiness around sense pleasure that comes as we let go of our usual orientation around getting what we want. Because that pattern around getting what we want, there's kind of an energy of the wanting in our system there, of either wanting or aversion, wanting to get something pleasant or get rid of something unpleasant. There's kind of energy in our system there that is basically keeping us from really being here with what's happening here in the moment. And as we let go or explore the possibility of just being here in the moment, sometimes, and sometimes when we open to being here in the moment, what we recognize is, wow, there's a lot of reactivity going on in the moment. But sometimes when we open to what's going on in the moment, it's just really simple. It's a breath. Or it's the feeling of a settledness, of the relaxation of body. Or perhaps if you're taking a walk outside and you're really able to be present with the walk, there's a kind of an appreciation of the nature that you're in. That the presence of mind, when we are more fully present in experience, there's another way that sense pleasure creates a kind of happiness. And it's a different kind of happiness than getting something that we want or getting rid of something that we don't want. It's more of a happiness of being with and appreciating the simplicity of being alive and of being here. Sometimes when I'm in a very present state, the simplest things can be so delightful. Seeing the way a tree arc against the sky, or even just seeing a little squirrel on my fence. Just the delight of another being in my field. And so I don't want you to have the idea that sense pleasure is somehow bad, because in fact, as we start to open to really being present with mindfulness, there's a different way that sense pleasure feels. And it's not about having things or keeping them. There's I think it's a Blake poem, and I don't know that I'll get it exactly right, but it's something along the lines of, when one who holds, let's see, what's it? One who tries to hold to a joy doth the winged life destroy. But one who kisses the joy as it flies lives in eternity's sunrise. It's that kind of sense of allowing things to just flow through and not feel like you have to stop this. I want to hold on to this. The way you might watch a sunset, watching a sunset, it's continually changing. And the appreciation, a part of the appreciation of it is seeing how it changes. And so when we can be with the changing nature of experience and appreciate that side of the experience, there's a different kind of happiness that happens. And I would say that the happiness isn't as much connected to the sense pleasure itself, but it's almost more connected with being present. It's the sense of being present that creates that kind of happiness. And then there's some different kinds of happiness and pleasure and kind of wholesome qualities that come in relationship to, in relationship to other people. The happiness of generosity, of the happiness of non-harming, and the happiness of kindness. So these kinds of relational happinesses are worth also exploring. We can practice with some of them kind of consciously. Many of these exploration around happiness can both be recognizing when these arise kind of naturally. And so you might be curious about recognizing when does a sense of generosity arise? Like that example around the letting somebody have an easy merge on the freeway. What does it feel like to allow that? Touching into that sense of offering. Or what does it feel like when you offer a gift to somebody? The Buddha talks about, it might be commentarial more than the Buddha saying this, but there's a teaching in the tradition that generosity, offering something, provides happiness before you make the offering, while you're making the offering and after you make the offering. So again, it's kind of looking at, kind of like I was looking at with the smile. We could think about the smile as an offering, you know, like the you know, how long does it last? What's the trajectory around it? And at one point I was practicing with any time a thought of generosity arose, exploring following through on it. And Joseph had suggested this at one point. Joseph Goldstein had suggested it. And so at one point I was in a museum store and I saw this little puzzle or something, and the thought came up in my mind, oh, this would be perfect for my friend's daughter. And immediately, it was interesting. First of all, it was interesting immediately to see how much the mind made excuses to not do it. Immediately saying, oh, it's not, you know, it's not her birthday, or I haven't been in touch with them in a long time. It'll look really odd for this present to just arrive kind of randomly. What are they going to think? Or just all kinds of thoughts like that. But because I had this practice of following through, I said, okay, no, I'm going to buy this thing and send it off. And as I did that, thinking about doing that, there was a kind of a delight in my mind to think about how the daughter might receive it, what she might think. You know, there's the kind of delight of contemplating offering it. And then in hearing, there was delight because, you know, there can be the sense or the recognition of it being appreciated. So you can practice with these things too. You know, take times or explore generosity. Explore how does it feel to behave in a non-harming way. You know, this is an interesting one for us. I think you know, we do practice with non-harming. We talk about the precepts here quite a bit. You know, we talk about exploring, you know, not creating harm with our actions. And yet so often as we explore that, we focus on kind of the shame side or something. It's like, it's almost like, oh, I shouldn't do that. Or it's you know, we focus on the side of, you know, that it would be bad to do that. As opposed to, it would be bad to do that that harmful thing, as opposed to appreciating how wonderful it is to engage in non-harming. You know, we all actually engage in non-harming a lot. And just contemplate just for a moment. If everyone on this planet, every person on this planet decided to not kill another living being, what kind of a different world this would be? And you are engaging in that practice of not harming other living beings. It's not a small thing. Appreciating your non-harming conduct, as opposed to emphasizing when you do something. I mean, it's useful to recognize when you do something that creates harm. And yet, there's a lot of time that we are not. And so recognizing that, appreciating that. There's a teaching around the non-harming, that as we engage in the precepts, engage in non-harming, that we cultivate. It's offering a gift to everyone around us. It's offering a gift of safety to people around us. But it's also offering ourselves the bliss of blamelessness. And that's a piece that we don't often connect to. We don't often recognize that part. Something in our minds orients us towards what we've done wrong as opposed to when we've done things skillfully. So it just kind of seeing if you can recognize that, orient to that. And then another aspect of practice in relationship around the beautiful qualities is the brahmaviharas, the kindness, compassion, and joy. So when you feel, when you notice that kind of connection with anyone, taking that in. And as I mentioned before around going into the Safeway, that was kind of a conscious practicing of these qualities. I was actually with each person, I was consciously trying to bring in a wish. You know, may you be happy, may you have ease in your life. Just orienting or inclining the mind towards that. And actually, it was quite amazing. I found that for that stretch of time, I don't do this so much anymore. I should do it again because it was really great for that stretch of time. And partly it was because I was kept going to the same store, so it kind of got to be, it was like my metta monastery, that particular store. Whenever I went in there, I would practice wishing a phrase of kindness to every person that I met. And boy, after a while, I really loved going into that store. You know, it was no longer just a chore to go get my groceries. It was delightful to feel that connection, to feel that sense of the open heart. And so you can actively cultivate, incline the mind in that direction with some small, simple practices. You know, maybe you could decide to practice kindness to the cashier in the store, you know, a smile. You don't have to like do a deep, soulful gaze into the cashier's eyes, but you know, just how are you today? And being aware of that of them as a person, seeing if there can be some simple kindness there. It's more accessible than you think when you remember it. So that's the hard part, is remembering. So, you know, just seeing if you can maybe find some ways to remember that kind of practice. And then there's a kind of happiness that can come in the practice itself. I talked about this a little earlier when you know, even as we're looking at something challenging or difficult, there have been times when it's been kind of surprising to me, and many people have talked about this to me too, that you know, as you begin to get curious, it's like, oh, well, what is the human experience of frustration or confusion? Or there can be a kind of delight that you're engaged with that. And so there can be, with the practice, we can sometimes get some more direct kinds of experiences of well-being through concentration or just when the mind settles down. As the mind settles down in concentration, there can be some very, very lovely states of heart and mind, just feelings of delight and bliss and comfortableness in the body, ease, peace. And so the state of meditation can create the conditions for those to arise sometimes. And yet even when we're working with something challenging, we can also have a sense of a container, something maybe bigger that's holding the difficulty, that has some measure of balance, of some measure of ease or peace. And so in the exploration in working with difficulty, sometimes we can be curious to kind of step back and recognize, well, there's, yes, this difficult thing is happening. Well, and there's this mindfulness, and there's a kind of, there is a little bit of a sense of ease around it. So you might be able to kind of touch into some of the beautiful qualities that are coming along for the ride as we practice mindfulness, even with difficult states of mind. And there's several other kinds of happiness that I could talk about. I'll just mention one more. And this is one of the subtler forms of happiness, and I would call this the happiness of not suffering. This is just basically the happiness that when there's not a problem, and this is the kind of happiness that we really tend to overlook a lot, because when there's not a problem so much going on, our mind feels, it's kind of like it feels like, well, I don't need to pay attention to anything. I don't need to pay attention to this because there's no problem. So where else can I put my attention? And so we kind of can jump over or miss some of these subtler states. So an example, just to kind of give you a sense of what this kind of happiness is like, because we experience this kind of, the possibility for this kind of happiness a lot. So just imagine that you have a broken leg, a cast over the knee, so kind of clunky, kind of bulky, and you need crutches to get around. So just take yourself through your day a little bit, you know, getting out of bed, getting up, getting dressed, getting to your kitchen to make a breakfast, possibly having somebody to help you with that if you have somebody in your house to help you with that. So just the clunkiness of that. It's a little bit of a struggle. Maybe a lot of a struggle. And then just imagine how you would feel if that cast vanished. Just your leg is better again. That kind of sense of the freedom, of the ease, of the ability to kind of move again, that's kind of indicative of the happiness of non-suffering. That kind of no problems happening right now. Now, this happens to us a lot. I've been particularly aware of this recently with all of the disasters around us. The other day, I flushed my toilet and felt so much appreciation for the fact that my toilet worked, that this wasn't a problem. You know, that there was, that I was in a house that was functioning, that, you know, hadn't been flooded. There was a sense of appreciation for that possibility. And that appreciation understood. It wasn't a kind of an appreciation that was holding on to it or trying to or denying anything. In fact, that appreciation really clearly recognized that this is conditions. And in a moment, there could be an earthquake and plumbing would go out in a moment. And then there would be a different experience to deal with. And so this kind of happiness of non-suffering is something that we can explore a lot. And so what does it feel like when things are just okay? When there's not particularly a problem? I find, you know, there's sometimes transition moments that can be interesting to explore here, because often I find transition moments I tend to slur over. I don't really take in that something is finishing and that this is ending and that the next thing will begin, because as something ends, it's almost like I'm jumping into the next thing. And so, you know, how does it feel to have finished a meal before you get up to clean the dishes? How does it feel to have taken a shower and to have your body be clean? You know, so that those moments of transitions when something is completing, that often in some of those times there can be a sense of whew, okay, it's just no particular problem here. What is that like? Times of waiting can be another time. I mean, we can often make problems when we're waiting, you know, at a stoplight, for instance. I'd encourage this kind of practice if you give yourself time to get somewhere, you know, if you have plenty of time to get somewhere and you don't feel rushed, then how is it to sit at a stoplight? There's nothing you have to do in that moment particularly. You don't have to navigate traffic. You're just sitting there. What is that like? There can be a sense of things are just okay in this moment. This okayness can be kind of a subtle feeling. Peace, ease, can be kind of a subtle form of happiness. But it's really worth beginning to get a taste of it. Because this is this kind of happiness that comes with the kind of not needing things to be any different than they are right now. So no problem. This is a pointer to the deeper kind of happiness that the Buddha pointed to. So we can begin to be curious about these wholesome states of mind. Simple ones. Just really simple ones. It's not like we have to find these big, you know, big delights or big joys. It can be simple moments of ease, moments of connection with somebody, moments of generosity, moments of recognizing that you're taking care of your fellow human beings with non-harming. What is that like? This will support you in your practice. It will help you to recognize this other side of the equation, the side of the cultivation of the wholesome, cultivation of the beautiful states of mind. So there's some time for comments or questions or thoughts or reflections, anything. I think that was it. You have a question. Okay, go.
Sometimes I'll catch myself being happy, just being happy, and then I'll realize that it has something to do with my standards being low.
So.
That you know, if I were pickier, I wouldn't be content right now, and that's fine. But it's sort of that comparing mind thing. It's like, and then I'll find myself hurled into some reactive state when I take another person's stance at something.
Uh-huh.
I'll all of a sudden feel ashamed of something that didn't bother me before. But, you know, when I was working from sort of a simpler a lower set of standards?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily use the words lower standards. I mean, that has kind of some baggage associated with it, potentially. You know, just a different perspective, right? A perspective perhaps that is less concerned about certain things. So this is really helpful to recognize that the perspective or the view that we're holding has an effect on our state of mind. And as you said, you know, when you kind of shift into somebody else's perspective, it can create, well, maybe this isn't as good as I thought it was, or and so noticing that, being curious about the view. And, you know, what view is actually more resonant for you? Is the other person's view really more resonant for you? Or is it just kind of almost a habit of kind of shifting into the other person's view or that other perspective?
Well, definitely that's a habit. It's you try on other people's perspectives. You know, it's sort of like, oh, can I see this from what I've gathered about you? How would you look at it? So that I think that's, we all do that all the time.
Yeah.
It's we test things constantly. And sometimes you test things and you think, oh, maybe I should wash my car.
Yeah. 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 Yeah, I mean, there's definitely, you know, but what I'd look at there, too, is something impacting others or not? I mean, so, you know, whether your car is washed or not, is that impacting others? But on the other hand, you know, how you engage with the heart, mm-hmm. that does have more impact. Yeah. Yeah, thank you for that. Yeah.
I guess the question I had is just like how can I bring that mindfulness more in connection and relationships with others? I'm noticing like a lot lately that I feel even just like simple acts of generosity, like I just sometimes feel so like anxious that like almost like unsafe that It's really challenging to just like even be with another person or like you know, like I can like do something and I can like do like a small act of generosity, but I'll just like kind of avoid eye contact because I just feel so much anxiety inside, and I would really like to bring more of that state of mindfulness being in connection with another person.
Yeah. You know, the with that anxiety, you know, that may be the stronger experience there. So that may be part of what to open to see if you can hold in a way the anxiety with some kindness internally. So that's a beginning in a way to hold the kindness internally may create the conditions for you to begin to be able to not be overtaken by it, not to have it kind of overtake you. Mm-hmm. And yet, you know, so one thing you could explore too, it sounds like it might be useful to explore using your imagination a little bit. So sometimes when something's very challenging for people, I suggest almost doing it as a reflection. So start by just exploring. Okay, so I'm going to see this person, and I'm going to have this conversation. And how's that going to be? What's that going to feel like? And maybe you can in a kind of an inner world, begin to model the possibility of a connection. Hmm. Does that make sense? So just imagining being able to make eye contact with somebody, and you're doing it now, so that's lovely.
Yeah, no, I can do it. It's just like when I get into the state of like fear and anxiety in my, you know, it's. When I'm going about my day, it's really hard to.
Yeah, I can imagine it. When the mind is in that state, it's very difficult to say, "Don't be in that state. Do something else." Mm. And so, you know, some kindness for yourself around that state. You know, to really see if you can hold that with some kindness. And that inner kindness may begin to give you a little bit more space for some connection. But I would encourage it to be take time with this. This is a slow kind of process. The practice, it can transform this kind of thing. It absolutely can, and it does take time. So it also might be useful to have a conversation. We could talk afterwards, for instance, and just have a little bit more of a conversation about ways to explore that. Mm. It's time to stop now. So thank you all for your attention.
Thank you.